If you're enjoying History Extra Long Reads, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thank you for your support. I hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello and welcome to History Extra Long Reads, where we take a deep dive into the past, bringing you the very best of BBC History Magazine, with fascinating articles from leading historical experts. Today, Britain's canals are the ideal place to enjoy a leisurely cruise. But in the 19th century, they had a vastly different reputation. In this long read, written by social historian Susan Law, we reveal how these waterways once served as the setting for brutal acts of alcohol-fuelled violence. This feature originally appeared in the February 2024 issue of BBC History Magazine and has been voiced in partnership with the Royal National Institute of Blind People.
One Friday night in March 1809, a working boat fully loaded with brandy, rum and 10 barrels of gunpowder travelled down the Paddington Canal on its way to the countryside, manned by a crew of four. A few miles out of London, two of the boatmen fancied a nightcap and decided to steal some of the liquor on board. Moving quickly by the flickering candlelight of a lantern, they bored a hole in one of the gunpowder barrels by mistake. It immediately caught fire, and in the words of a newspaper reporting on the incident, blew up with a most dreadful explosion. The two thieves were killed in an instant, and the resulting blaze spread into a nearby field, burning down three haystacks. Incredibly, one boatman asleep in the cabin escaped unharmed, as did a lad on the towpath beside the canal. The culprits had become the victims of their own crime. Despite its shocking outcome, the sequence of events leading up to the incident would not necessarily have been a surprise to British newspaper readers. Boatmen were notorious for their hard drinking, violence, and dishonesty, as were the navigators who dug the canal network, which had been spreading since the boom years of the Industrial Revolution. These vital arteries of trade had slashed transport costs by almost half, bringing manufacturers increased profits and making products cheaper for all. But this welcome new prosperity had a price, and from the earliest days, canals, aflush with plenty of goods to steal and vast quantities of alcohol to drink, attracted crime. In many ways, crime on the canals was symptomatic of life in 19th-century Britain, particularly for the labouring classes who endured a precarious existence of drudgery, gnawing hunger, and constant dread of unemployment. Workers flocked to urban manufacturing centres, where thriving industries like the cotton trade were serviced by this sprawling 4,000-mile network linking towns to rivers and ports, carrying essential cargoes of coal, corn, fresh fruit, pottery, and all kinds of finished goods. Working long hours to meet the relentless demands of commerce, some people found solace in drink, with disastrous consequences. In September 1838, a London bargeman named Thomas Townsend went berserk following a weekend binge with gin and shrub cocktails and a skinful of beer at the Noah's Ark pub in Limehouse. At 5 p.m. on the Sunday, he refused to pay for a pot of porter and proceeded to punch the landlord, smash several windows, and boot the policeman who came to arrest him. It ultimately took several officers to drag him outside, and he was later fined £5 for assault. Yet, concerns about alcohol-related violence were neither new nor limited to the waterways. Fears that members of a drunken underclass were threatening the fabric of society had been voiced centuries earlier in pamphlets such as A Monster Late Found Out and Discovered, published by London writer Richard Rawlidge in 1628. But as wine and spirit consumption soared, along with instances of disorderly behaviour, the government decided to tackle the issue by introducing the Beer Act. Passed in 1830, the law loosened restrictions on the sale of beer, In a bid to wean Britons off more potent beverages, such as gin, it had a rapid effect. 24,000 beer shops opened their doors within the space of just 6 months. Unsurprisingly, this only exacerbated the problem. In 1834, a parliamentary select committee was set up to investigate what one MP described as a torrent of drunkenness that desolates the land. One proposed remedy was education, with suggestions that libraries and museums should offer more innocent refreshments than the liquid poison now consumed. But others defended the right to drink, with the Essex Standard exclaiming, "If a man be thirsty, what avails showing him an alligator stuffed, a dried monkey or a snake in a bottle? Museums, indeed, for the chimney sweepers and the canal diggers and the coal heavers and the dustmen and all the rest who, tired with work, like a little comfort." For many, heavy drinking was simply a fact of life, especially among boatmen free to indulge whenever they wanted. Unlike other workers, men in the canal trade frequently found themselves in remote places away from the prying eyes of employers, but still close enough to the hundreds of canal-side pubs that lined the waterways. The hardest drinkers were usually found on board the non-stop flyboats, whose four-man crews worked around the clock with very little sleep. This rough work tended to attract unsavoury characters, and in 1839 the reputation of the flyboat sank to an all-time low when a brutal attack on a lone female passenger created a national outcry. On the 15th of June, a former magician's assistant named Christina Collins had set out on a journey by flyboat from Liverpool on the way to join her husband in London. 2 days later, however, her body was found floating in the water at Rugeley in Staffordshire. Witnesses testified that Christina seemed distressed at several places on the Trent and Mersey Canal and confirmed that they saw abusive behaviour by the inebriated boatmen, who later said they couldn't remember what had happened. Captain James Owen and boat hand George Thomas blamed each other, while Bill Ellis, the other crewman, said Christina had left the boat of her own accord. "I never saw anyone ill-treat her," he claimed. In July 1839, Owen, Thomas and Ellis stood trial in Stafford, charged with willful murder, rape, common assault and theft. The judge ruled there was no proof of any violence and directed the jury to acquit them of the rape charge. But the case made headlines when a second trial was ordered, specifically to include the evidence of a bigamist butcher who claimed that Owen had confessed his guilt while they were in prison together. Conveniently sidestepping the legal principle of double jeopardy, which would have ensured that the defendants could not be tried on the same facts twice, this second hearing ended with all three men being found guilty and sentenced to death. It had effectively been a show trial, designed to secure convictions at all costs, but the verdict was seized upon by religious campaigners as proof they were right to demand far-reaching moral reforms, including the banning of all working and drinking on the Sabbath. Yet, despite the introduction of new measures, such as Sunday morning closing, pub numbers continued to grow, particularly in expanding urban areas such as Bolton, which had one alehouse to every 170 people by 1849. Residents were forced to put up with unruly behaviour in the streets, with one Boltonian complaining that the public house was a full-grown monster. A radical solution was teetotalism. The temperance movement, which had both religious and political aims, was flourishing, and by the mid-19th century most towns had a temperance group, urging workers to take the pledge and quit drinking altogether. And yet these were mere drops in the ocean of liquor still swilling about the country. On the 9th of December 1854, a dramatic report headlined "Canal Boatman Running Amuck" appeared in the London Evening Standard. The landlord of the City Arms near Regent's Canal turfed out a riotous group at about 1 a.m. who ran wild, knocking down anyone they met. Two of the men, George Johnson and John Jones, were fined by the local magistrate, who commented, "Your conduct in this assault is one quite peculiar to the brutal class of boatmen to which you belong. You come up to this place heavily charged with strong beer and bring with you that stupid and most savage spirit that is very early and easily engrafted on you." Of course, it wasn't just boatmen who committed crimes on Britain's canal network. Located in isolated places on the edge of society, canals became convenient places for other people to dispose of dead bodies, and details of such incidents often caught the attention of newspapers and their readers. One particularly dramatic case began to unfold on the 15th of February 1886, when a police constable named William Hine left a canalside pub in the Warwickshire village of Fenny Compton. After waiting for the last customer to leave the premises, he set off at about 10 p.m. to walk the mile back to his cottage and waiting family. By midnight, however, he had not returned home. There was still no news of him the next morning, so police officers began searching fields and wharf buildings, while men on the canal banks slowly dragged the water in 2-foot sections. 4 days later, a pocket knife was found in a ditch hidden under a thick bramble hedge, one blade open and smeared with blood. 6 feet away, near a footpath, the search party found signs of a struggle, and further on discovered a police helmet with a long dent across it. Press interest in the case spread rapidly, and the Birmingham Daily Post even dispatched a reporter for an exclusive interview with Hine's parents. Finally, 9 days after he vanished, drag lines deployed by a search party on the Oxford Canal snagged on something submerged beneath the water, a quarter of a mile from the public house. The drag hooks caught on Hines's greatcoat and eventually brought his body to the surface, plastered with mud. A watch in the waistcoat pocket had stopped at 11:06 p.m. One suspect was a farmer named William Albert Kingerise, who had been drinking at the Wharf Inn until 10 p.m. on the night of Hines's disappearance. Nothing could be proven, however, and an inquest jury returned a verdict of willful murder against some person or persons unknown. The culprits may have been poachers, but in the absence of any conclusive evidence, it was just guesswork and the case was never solved. Such horrifying stories made the public jittery. The growth of Britain's railways meant the canal trade was in sharp decline, leaving miles of neglected waterways with overhanging trees and dilapidated towpaths, which were condemned as outdated relics. Canals were now a byword for everything illegal and immoral, and in 1884, the country's chief inspector of canal boats, John Bryden, reported, "The one great cause underlying the whole of the matter is the old, old story, drink, the lingering about for hours at a time, day after day, in the public house, spending money, time and energy soon induces poverty, strife, blasphemy, vice, squalor and misery, besides cruelty of many sad descriptions." This was simply the story of 19th century Britain, and it seemed as though nothing was ever going to stop alcohol-fueled crime. Thankfully, that dark and dangerous world of the waterways is long gone. When canal transport was superseded by cheaper alternatives and working barge traffic diminished, the traditional way of life along the cut disappeared. By the mid-20th century, the old barges had been replaced by new generations of boats for leisure cruising. Today, inland waterways are safe and peaceful places to escape on a narrow boat or take a relaxing towpath stroll. Canals that were once silent witnesses to shocking crimes are now calm, untroubled waters.
Today's long read was written by Susan Law, a journalist and social historian. Her book, Dark Side of the Cut, A History of Crime on Britain's Canals, was published by the History Press in October 2023. Thanks again to the Royal National Institute of Blind People for their help voicing this article, which first appeared in the February 2024 issue of BBC History magazine.